Oh, good, good, good. Okay. It was a double click. Thank you, Tava. Sorry about this this problem, and you know, thank you for your patience. For some reason, I have some sort of virus on my system, and I need to, I guess, clean it out or replace it. So, is this is the volume good? Is the sound good? Yes, you hear me? You hear me? Okay. Yes. Okay. Great. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So, again, I'm glad to be here. You know, together. It's great. Just before I start, if there are any questions that you want to discuss, or as I'm talking, some questions arise for you. I will pause and read them and answer them. I somehow more used to sitting with people and just exploring questions that you know we are having, and so there's like a back and forth sort of exchange. So please, if there are any questions that arise, just post them, and I would be glad to turn my attention to. So I wanted to start with a question, and I wanted to suggest that in order to listen, to really listen, there is a certain quality of quietness, a certain quality of spaciousness that is required, because so habitually the mind is spinning, and when the mind is spinning, it's really more difficult. It's more difficult to hear and to listen and to have the question sort of sink in. So the question I wanted to start with is about our intention. What is it that we want? What is it that I want? What is it that I look for in life, look for in my day-to-day? What is it that I would like to happen in my life? If we can like look at this question, because in a way our life takes the direction of our intention. So and our intention, well, we'll get to what is the source of our intention a little later, but depending on what our intention is, this is the direction that our life will take. Like, for example, like if you like gambling, like the excitement of you enjoy the excitement of risk taking at the casino and winning that whole gambling experience, you will find that you will be looking in that direction. You will be, you know, traveling to Atlantic City or whatever the closest casino is to you, or if you're, you know, in Europe, you know, there's also, you know, many different, you know, opportunities. And what your intention basically does, it leads your action, and as it leads your action, it sort of sifts out other things. In other words, you will not find yourself going to the museums or going to concerts if what you really like is gambling. Your mind, the mind will basically select out what you like the most, and and you will only be seeing what it is that you really want. So like if you want, for example, success, or if you want wealth, you know, material wealth, you will find yourself looking to, you know, get a job that gives you a lot of financial rewards, getting the advancement in your position and so on. Or if you want, if you like sports, for example, if you want to be a great athlete, then you will find yourself being engaged in these activities. But when you pause and look at what it is that you want, most often we confuse what we want with an object. In other words, we perceive that our wanting is a certain experience, such as the experience of success, or the experience of winning, or the experience of being famous. But what is behind that? If you look behind the things that you want, you will find that what you really want is the happiness. You want the peace. You want the well-being that seemingly these objects give you. So in a way, you could say that as you are desiring something, your mind is unsettled. In other words, it is in a state of imbalance between what is going on right now and what you would like your mind to be like. You would like to experience a peace, a happiness that getting the raise or getting the promotion will give you. So behind every want that we, every desire that we pursue, which seemingly takes the shape of a certain experience, we are looking for peace. We are looking for happiness. For example, when you want a promotion and you get it, you will find that at that moment, the moment that you get this promotion, there is an end of the desire. And it is this end of desire, let's call it a state, for example, this end of desire that is your happiness, that you like, that you enjoy. Or like when you sometimes look over a beautiful sunset, a beautiful scene, for that moment that you are looking at this beautiful scene in front of your eyes, your mind is totally still and absent. It is in a state of awe. You're in a state of wonder. And for that moment, there is no you. There is no person. There is just the beauty, just the peace and the love and the tranquility and the ecstasy, and just the happiness that is referred to as, what I refer to as happiness. Or even like in, you know, simpler way, on a physical level, when you are hungry or when you are thirsty, the body, when the body is fed, at a certain moment as the body is being fed, there is an absence of the hunger. There is an end to the hunger. And what is revealed at that moment is that same quality of presence and well-being that you experience when you are standing in front of a beautiful sunset. And this, if you explore every time in your life when you have realized your desire, there is a moment of end of desire and a moment of harmony that comes to the surface in a way. A better way of saying it is that, like, the distance of wanting, the disharmony of desire, I don't mean it in a negative way, in no way am I trying to talk down desire. I'm just sort of exploring a process that I have noticed, and maybe you can notice it within yourself in your own way. So this is not an anti-desire tirade. It's just pointing that whenever you fulfill your desire, what's actually happening is that, like, the waves sort of become still, and somehow the mind sinks into the heart. It's not really noticed, but that's why we're talking about it. maybe so that you can explore that and see if that is the case for you. I'm not saying that it is, but it's, I don't think we are that different, but you have to explore it for yourself and see if that's true for you, that whenever a desire is realized, there is a quieting of the mind and this dissolving of the mind into the presence, into the heart, into a purity of being that is, it seems that it's not something that you do. You don't have, like, to take a shovel and dig for peace. It is more like when the desire quiets down, it is as if the peace that's there is revealed. It reveals itself, and that's really fascinating, because you're just noticing that, wait a minute, I really didn't do anything. I'm just, like, standing here in front of this beautiful view. And then I noticed, it's just a matter of noticing, I noticed there is a just beautiful tranquility and peace and stillness. Where did it come from? And the mind would go, oh, well, you know, the way it works is that you have to continue to look at the sunset and sort of fix it in your mind, just sort of freeze frame it. And if you freeze frame it, then you will be eternally peaceful, eternally happy. But that is not true. That is really, thank goodness it's not true. Because good luck if you try to freeze frame a beautiful sunset. Although there are some really beautiful photography by Elliot Poe and many other beautiful artists who have captured that moment of. Pure presence, pure beauty, and pure. To freeze frame anything, it's just a matter of noticing that, in fact, it is right here, present. Is this peace, this tranquility, is present when the desire meets its end. In other words, when the desire is fulfilled means it dies, it dissolves, it ends, because it has reached what it wants. At the moment of absence of the desire, there is peace, there is happiness, and there is an absence of any internal contraction, any internal contradiction is absent. So then the thought might arise, oh goodness, now I have a new job, and my new job is to get rid of desire. And my answer to that is no. Because if you try to end desire, good luck. No. Somehow there is an organismic wiring that says, you need to interact with the world. You need to interact in the world of appearances. And so you need to desire to have a car if you want to drive and go visit your mom if she lives, a few miles away. So I wouldn't trouble myself with trying to get rid of desire, because there is one more desire that you're adding to the pile. It's as if there is one more problem that we need to solve, which is how to end desire. No. The good news is that we don't need to end desire. But we can turn our attention to the space in which thought arises. We can turn our attention to the presence in which the appearances, experiences arise. Because as you are here right now hearing these words, you also are experiencing, that's another way of putting it, you're experiencing listening, and the listening is being experienced in your presence, in the presence of, in the space, in your space. You know the expression about like that goes, this and that thing appeared in my space, or you just appeared in my space. You can sort of use that expression more to describe what the experience is like, as opposed to I am experiencing this and that. It's more like there is a space. It's not a physical space. It's not a mind space. It's not an objective space. We don't know what it is. Let's just not even trouble ourselves for now with this space or with this presence. But we can turn our attention from the movement of thought and desire without vilifying it, without making a problem out of it, without putting a curse on it. And just notice that there is also another reality, let's say, that is, maybe we could say, a bigger reality, a larger reality that is present, is always present. It is in this reality that you can perceive your desire, that you perceive your thoughts, that you perceive your feelings, that you perceive, your friends, that you perceive thoughts and perceptions and sensations. So it's a shift from the desire without arguing with it to the presence. We've already tried, I'm certain that the people who are listening here to ACIM are truth lovers. We've all tried to pursue happiness in external things. We've tried situations and all sorts of relationships. Over and over, we've experienced firsthand the happiness that is the result of achieving those goals. Like when you meet somebody that you love, or that you know you feel very harmonious with, in that moment, you and the other, you and your partner, sort of become one. There is like a total yesness to each other, and that's very fortunate when it happens. It doesn't happen very often, but when it happens, it's very lovely. It is like a mutual yes, and in this yesness, any objections, any conditions are absent. And this is what we refer to as I love you, and we refer as love, which is the absence of a me condition, an absence of terms and conditions that the other person has to meet. So also in relationships, we have realized happiness occurs when the me and the you are absent, me and the other are absent. So, on the other hand, we also know unhappy relationships. We have experience, and hopefully that's not where we're at right now, but if we are, we are. Where there is unhappiness in the relationship. So the question is like, what is this unhappiness? One way of looking at unhappiness is to look at it as a contraction that a contraction that is being experienced. The mind, sort of, rather than being in abeyance, rather than being listening and following, is in the driver's seat, dictating, sort of saying, well, wait a minute, you know, you need to listen to me. You need to listen to what I want. And whenever there is this conversation that basically is dictating what I want, this is when your sense of separate me and your sense of separate other has come up into the space. This separate self, it's important to contemplate what it is, and it's important to understand what it is made for, what it is made of. Many of us believe that the separate me, the separate self, that the person is a very real entity, that it has a weight, it has a mass, it has an actual independent existence. And most of us refer to this separate self by pointing to the body. You say, oh, I am me, and we point usually to our chest. We don't point to our finger. We don't point to our toe. We point somehow, you know, maybe we refer to the heart, but we point to the chest to say, well, I am me, and then we point to the other out there and we say, you are you, as two separate selves. But it's important to get a little closer to the separate self and not just accept this description of the separate self and take it to be truly what we are. So when you look at when you look at yourself as a separate person, you, whatever this me, you know, that you refer to when we point to our chest, what is it that we're referring to? What is it that we refer to when we are talking about me? You know, we don't wake up in the morning and start, you know, thinking, you know, I am this body. No, we wake up in the morning, we wash our face, and we prepare breakfast and look at our schedule for the day, and we move on. We don't think, oh, I am this body. At least, you know, I think we don't. We don't wake up and think, I am this body. So what is, when you wake up in the morning and you're not thinking, I am this body, I am this person, what is a separate self? What is you at that precise moment? When you splashing your face with water in the morning, or just washing your face or taking a shower, and there isn't the thought of, I am this body, what is the separate you at that very moment? Or right here, right now, as you're listening, right here, right now, what is you right here, right now? You're not thinking, I am this body. You're not thinking, my name is so-and-so. You're not thinking, my mother's name is so-and-so. You're not thinking, I am born on such and such a date. No. You're not thinking that. You're just here, just sitting, listening. So what is the separate you right here, right now? So you have to turn your attention to it. And when you turn your attention, if you turn your attention right now to what are you right now, you will notice, before the mind kicks in, that it's pure presence. In other words, it's pure stillness, pure silence. And this presence, this pure silence, pure beingness, is not a thought. You can sort of intuit it. You know it because you are it. You don't know it because you are thinking it. You know it at a deeper level than the level of thought. It's as if presence knows itself. It intuits itself. It has an intuition of itself. It's a presence that is self-knowing. In other words, you don't need somebody to walk into the room right now where you are and tell you, hey, you are present, or you are this presence. And you don't need thought to tell you you are presence, because thought will not say that. Thought most likely will say what has been saying for a long time, that you are this body-mind. But thought cannot know what you truly are, because thought is perceived by you. You perceive thought. Thought does not perceive you. In other words, thought is an object that arises in you. It's a perception. It's a subtle perception. And the perception cannot know the perceiver. When you look over a tree, you know the tree, but the tree does not know you. in a way. And it's the presence can only know, let me say it another way, presence can only be known by presence, by itself. But it does not know itself as an object. You know, presence can know a tree as an object. It can know a thought as an object. But you cannot know yourself, your true self, as an object, because presence is not an object, it's not a form. The body is a form, the table is a form, thought, a sensation, a perception is a form. But that which perceives the form is not a form and is cannot be perceived by thought. So, when you turn your attention back to what is a separate self, what is me, the person, because there is such an experience that many of us have of me as a person, you will find that. And you need to explore that in yourself to verify that what I'm saying is relevant to you, makes sense to you, is actually your experience. And not don't believe anything that I'm saying, as you wish, but I encourage you not to, only to believe your own experience, your own exploration. If you turn your attention to the sense of you, the sense of myself, that as a person, you will find thought. For example, you will find a thought arising that says, yes, I am Magdi, and I am born in such and such a place, and I have so many brothers, blah, blah, blah. It was just... you will find thought. That might say, yes, you will find thought. Yes, you will find thought. Thought that says, I am a person. You will also find a perception, maybe. You will look at your hand. For example, you look at your hand right now. You will find a perception. That's very interesting. This is an interesting little exercise we could do right now. Just look at your hand right now. As you look at your hand, there is a perception, yes? A pure perception. But notice how quickly the mind, meaning thought, says, this is my hand. Thought says, this is my hand. But before, just for a fraction of a millisecond, before thought came in and said, this is my hand. There is a pure perception. You are experiencing the perception. You're experiencing a perception. So in its purity, your hand is just a perception. It's an experience of a perception. It's a perception arising in the space. You know, a minute ago we were talking about presence and space, that this perception is just arising, it's appearing like magically, instantaneously, it's appearing magically in the space. There is an awesome quality. Actually, if you look at your hand, you continue looking at your hand if you could, it's awesome. It's an amazing thing. Imagine fingers, wow. It's really amazing. It's really magical. You think of robotics, how much is being spent on trying to make a hand. your robotic hand, they've been spending billions of dollars trying to make a robotic hand that can, and our hand can feel, you can sort of touch the table, you see that sensation? It's amazing. It is truly amazing. So there is like, is such a purity and a sense of magic and miraculous quality and awesomeness to just the perception. The perception and the sensation. You put your hand on the table, sense the table. What an amazing thing. The sensation is magical. It is truly magical. But it's only magical when we're not living in the thought that, oh, this is my hand, oh, the same darn hand, and I'm gonna die in so many years, and I need to cut my nails and whatever. Because in thought, especially the thought that has like a me, a personal me thing to it, it's limited. There isn't the sense of awe and the sense of wonder and magic. Thought doesn't take you there. It doesn't go there. It's strictly limited to its content. Like a thought could say, "Oh wow, that's a beautiful tree," yeah. But it's not the thought that experiences the awe and the sense of magic and the sense of wonder. It is presence. It is you as presence that experiences happiness, that experiences beauty, that experiences joy. And this experience of awe and wonder and joy and beauty and happiness, if you just turn your attention to it, you will find that it's not contained. It is not like inside a box or inside your belly or inside your head. Just go to, if you can, like, sort of remember right now being in a place where you experience happiness, like being maybe with, if you have a child, like being, well, children can be also a pain in the butt, but in a place where of, like by the beach, maybe going for a walk by the beach.
Yeah.
And you are feeling this beautiful peace and happiness, just feeling the sand and the sun and hearing the waves and watching the ocean. This experience, if you go there right now, you will notice is uncontained. It's not limited inside a body. And yet, you are experiencing it. You are that. You are that at that very moment. You are that limitless happiness, that borderless presence, joyful presence. Yes? Is that not your experience? So when we come back to like this whole sense of me, the separate me, you will find that when we're referring to me as if it's an actual thing, in fact, it is not. It is just a thought and sensation. For example, like many people talk about feeling contained inside of their body, as if they cannot step out of inside their body. Well, what is that? Is that not a sensation? It is a sensation, but this sensation does not define you, does not limit you, because it's arising as an experience that you as pure presence, you as pure consciousness is experiencing. And whatever you're experiencing does not limit the experiencer. What is experienced does not limit the experiencer, the true experiencer. And when you look at a tree, you're not limited by your perception of the tree. When you hear these words, you're not limited by the hearing of these words. These words are just appearing in your space, like the tree, the perception of the tree appears in your place without limiting you, without defining you. So you remain undefined by whatever is defined. Whatever is defined is an object, is a form that does not define you, does not define the true you. So you could say that the experience of happiness is being the true you, is realizing the true you and being the true you, while the experience of unhappiness is imagining that you are defined by a certain perception, you're defined by a certain feeling, you're defined by a certain thought, which are a perception. A thought is a perception. A feeling is a perception, it's something that you perceive. So, somebody asked here on the screen, Awakening Together Radio, hello, how do I find permanent peace? How does this become our total experience? Feelings are fleeting, feelings are momentary. Yes. Feelings are like the weather, like clouds in the sky. When you go to sleep, you're feeling, as you lie down in bed, you're feeling something, and 10 minutes later, you're in the dream world. That feeling, the initial feeling that you were experiencing when you first lie down, is gone. And then you're in the dream world, feeling and experiencing different things. And then you go into deep sleep. Complete absence of feelings. Boom. Then you wake up in the morning and you might be feeling stressed by the thought that, oh, I have so many things to do today. But all these feelings are fleeting, like Awakening Together Radio said, they are fleeting. And they do not define you. And that's the beauty of it. They don't define you. Imagine if you were defined by feelings. You would be basket case. Well, we're not basket case. Sometimes we feel like we're a basket case, but you know, what can we do? It's because we identify with the feeling. But at some point, you start realizing, wait a minute, no, these feelings don't define. Nothing defines me. How could a feeling define me? It's appearing in me. Boom. 10 minutes later, it's gone. You have to think really hard to figure out, what was the feeling again? What was the feeling I was feeling 10 minutes ago? How did I feel at 7 o'clock this morning? How did you feel 10 minutes ago? It's all gone. It's just like the weather. And you know, one could say that feelings are like images on the screen. They don't define the screen. They don't stain the screen. They just appear there. Now, it would be nice if the feelings that were appearing on the screen were not all, dark and gloomy, one after the other. Oh my God, I have to go to work. Oh gee, I didn't get this promotion. Oh, she doesn't love me. Oh, my kids, are misbehaving, and so on. You're right. And in a way, that's what we're talking about. That somehow these feelings that do not define me. Are gloomy. And what makes a feeling gloomy? I mean, look at it. Let's say that I don't get the promotion. I don't get the promotion. So why is it gloomy? My not getting the promotion is gloomy because I believe that my happiness depends on me getting this promotion. While it is not, your happiness is not depending on getting this promotion. you're free to believe me or not, but don't believe me, you have to find out for your own. If you decide that your happiness is depending on the promotion, well, you know, you're in trouble. If you believe your happiness is dependent on a relationship, you're in trouble. If you believe that your happiness is dependent on anything, you're in trouble. But you know, it's not real trouble. It's just a belief. It's not true, real trouble. It's not like, you know, consciousness is ending. It's just strictly a belief. And you know, you look at the belief, and you continue to look at it. You look at it, and you realize that all you're doing is holding on to a contraction. And at some point, you decide to play with it. You decide to relax it. You decide to sort of, let me see what I can do with it. Maybe I could experiment with it. So experiment with it. Say, well, wait a minute. No. My happiness is not dependent on promotion. I'm going to drop that belief. You can experiment with it. But you know, behind all the beliefs that create contractions, that create those gloomy feelings, is the central belief that I, this pure presence that hears these words right now, is limited and is personal. That I, this universal consciousness, this pure beingness, is limited to body-mind. That is a belief. That is a belief, and there's no evidence for it. They have never found inside any body, they have never found, scientists and whoever, have never found consciousness inside a body. I know that there is a lot of research going on about finding consciousness inside the brain, or where is consciousness located. Consciousness is not located. A body is located. An object is located. But consciousness is not located. And you know that through your direct presence, your direct experience. Not through your belief system that you are a body-mind, that you are Joe or Jim or Dove or Megdi. Not through thought, not through a feeling, oh, I feel I am whatever, fill in the blanks. No, you know that you are this pure aware presence, this universal consciousness. You know it through your direct knowingness. It knows itself. Presence knows itself. And it knows, meaning you know, you, the real, the true you, know. You are limitless, unbound. So the invitation is to reestablish yourself as what you truly are, to recognize your true nature. And not continue to mistake yourself for a name, for a body, for a bunch of cells and organs, for a limited person. It is 12:56, and I wanted to, I know it's just a couple of minutes left. If there is any questions, any 12:56, any questions, if anybody has anything that they would like to share. I'm grateful to spend this time together. It's the exploration of our true nature is the most central exploration in our life, more important than raising a family, having a career. I'm not talking down about raising a family or having a career. All that is, it's very important to live, you know, in the dream as happily, as smoothly as it's possible, of course. But it is not possible to live the dream happily when we have not realized our true nature. It's very difficult. To live in the mind, because they're so shifting, like is it maybe it is David who wrote, these feelings are fleeting. If you live according to feelings and thoughts, they're so shifting, they're like quicksand. So you have to go to the core, you have to go to the source, and then everything flows from the source. It's like, what's the point of having like a beautiful car, beautiful yellow or red or whatever color car you like, nice rims and beautiful tires and leather seats and wonderful GPS, all the latest gadgetry, but it has a faulty engine. You were living parked in front of your pocket. You have to somehow get it towed in front of your car and impress your neighbors. But what are you gonna do with you know? You can't. You need the car. You need to be able to drive it around. So, the exploration of what we truly are is really, really important. And to just to sort of give the mind a little rest, you know, let it, it's not about combating the mind or getting rid of the mind, but inviting the mind to sort of, okay, you've been busy for so long, you can just take a break now and allow presence to be in the driver's seat. Allow thoughts and sensations and perceptions to relax in your presence. Don't struggle with them. Allow them to just arise. They arise anyways. It's not about allowing them. It's recognize them when they arise. You don't make them arise and you don't make them stop. But just recognize them. But more important than recognizing them, recognize the presence that you are in which they arise. And they're made out of your presence. They arise in your presence as your presence. And they do not define you. Nothing does. Thank you very much. Very lovely to be with you. Thank you, David, and Melvin, and Blackie, and Nambodi, and Larry, all of you. Much love to you all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Magdi. And I did appreciate everything.